Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, April the 2nd. And welcome to our commentary. I'm going to begin today congratulating this basketball team from Iowa, the women's basketball team. I don't follow women's basketball that much, to be honest with you, but this is a team that we can, you know, you can fall in love with a team like this one from Iowa. And this young woman who's just an absolutely amazing player, and that's the young woman, Caitlin, forgive me, I don't remember her last name, but she's just absolutely fun to watch. I mean, she's just a great shooter. She loves to play. She apparently is a really positive person. And where she goes now, I don't know. I've heard some rumors that she could be going to the women's NBA, WNBA, I think it's called. And I, you know, if that's her future, then I wish her the best. I think she would be a big asset for the WNBA from a marketing standpoint. I mean, I can see lots of young women in the country following her, but she's just great. And that team is absolutely fabulous. So congratulations to everybody up in Iowa and this amazing women's basketball team. I will say this, and we've said this before, apparently the team from LSU, Louisiana. I mean, that's right next door, LSU. And normally I like the teams from LSU. They're good teams. They have great football teams, great baseball teams, and great basketball teams as well. They've always been an adversary of the Texas teams, but they play really well at LSU. But apparently the women's LSU team went into the locker room before the national anthem. I have no idea why teams do that. And I have to tell you that I am really happy that Iowa won because of that. I think these teams that don't want to salute the national anthem or don't want to be associated with the national anthem, you know, there's lots of airports in the country and there's lots of flights. They can go to the country of their choice. And I'm sure there'd be lots of us who'd be willing to contribute to the ticket prices. And if you don't like the national anthem or you don't feel the responsibility to stand for the national anthem in a game like that, a national game, I don't know. I think there's something wrong with you, and you really need to look at yourself in the mirror and ask yourself a very simple question. Where else would you rather live? Do you think any of those young women would enjoy the opportunities they have here in other countries? I don't think so. I don't think so. So they need to really think about that. But again, congratulations to the Iowa women's basketball team. They're just a delight to watch and to follow. I want to begin. I have a post over at the American Thinker this morning talking about climate change or climate change policies and now electric trucks. The Biden administration is issuing some mandates on electric trucks. It may get shot down in the courts. I hope it does. But hopefully President Trump will shoot them down next January when he comes in. But this is insane, making these mandates on trucking companies. Everybody I listen to who knows something about that industry keeps telling, number one, we're not ready for these electric trucks. We don't have the battery capacity. We don't have the charging capacity. You know, these trucks can only go so long, and they're very heavy, so they put extra pressure on the roads because they have extra weight because of the batteries and so on. And nobody has thought about any of this. Everything is being done in the name of climate change, but nothing is being done in the name of common sense. And between doing everything in the name of climate change and doing nothing, there's got to be a sensible position here where we not only, you know, do something about the environment, but we do something about the pocketbook, because Americans cannot pay these rates. I mean, these electricity rates, these gasoline rates. And if now we're going to increase the cost of trucking with these mandates, well, that's going to, you know, that's going to translate into higher food prices and higher prices for everything in our country. So, I mean, there's got to be some common sense into this. You're not getting it from the White House, because everything they do is in the name of climate change. It's like an ideology for them. It's no longer about being sensible. It's just an ideology. And that's not a good way to go. got a post coming out Wednesday morning about what is going on in Mexico. As you probably know from some of the chats that we've done before, they have elections coming up in June 2nd. They're going to have national elections for president, for Congress, a lot of mayors, a lot of governors. Not exactly sure how they divide it, whether everybody's on the ballot or just like we do here with the Senate, only so many on the ballot. But the presidency is on the ballot, and many senators are on the ballot, and many mayors are on the ballot. And in the last couple of days, a woman running for mayor in a city in the central part of Mexico, the state of Guanajuato, a woman was killed as a candidate for mayor. And she is now number 14. 14 candidates had been shot this year during the election season. And the election season is two more months away. So how many more will be killed? And what is going on, I talk to people down in Mexico, and what they're saying is what's going on is that the criminal elements, the criminal groups, are basically sending a message to these governors and these small town mayors. They're going after the smaller ones because they're more vulnerable. They don't have the same ability to defend themselves, of course, as a president or a governor. They have less security about them. They don't have the budgets for as much security, let's say, as the president or a cabinet member or the governor of some of these states. So they're more vulnerable to an attack. And they're going after these small mayors basically to send the message. And the message is you work with us, meaning the criminal elements, you do what we tell you to do, or we're going to kill you. And so far, they've killed 14 this year. So this situation in Mexico is getting pretty scary. I don't know how else to tell you. It's getting pretty scary. And, you know, as I say, I continue to feel that Mexico cannot go on this way. The violence rates are very high. And now the violence is creeping into a lot of areas detrimental to Mexico. So I hope the new president will take a different approach to the violence and maybe try to make Mexicans feel more secure. Because we can say this about President López Obrador. He has not, frankly, shown much interest in making the Mexican people more secure. In fact, he's doing things that are, frankly, making the country more unsafe. So very sad, very tragic shooting down in Mexico. A fairly young woman, I think she was in her 30s, who was a candidate for mayor. Very sad situation down in Mexico. And in fact, on the post that I will be posting tomorrow, I begin by saying that more and more women are running for office in Mexico, which of course means that more women are going to be shot to death as candidates. A very sad situation down in Mexico. Well, we have a bridge in Baltimore that came down, if you remember this accident that they had and all kinds of things going on. I personally have not, you know, gotten into the details of it. I do know that it's a major economic problem to have this bridge down because there's a lot of commerce that goes through that bridge over that water. And then there's also a lot of traffic in and out of that port. So I do think the federal government should provide some assistance to try to put that bridge back up and certainly get the channel open so that trucks can go in and out or ships can go in and out. I mean, trucks, of course, over the bridge. And we need to get that done as soon as possible. I don't know how quickly it can be done, but I think as soon as we can do it, and yes, I do think some federal assistance should step in here and help the state of Maryland with this situation. It's, as I say, it does have economic consequences for the whole country when you have a major port like Baltimore, at least a portion of the port that is shut down. So we do need to do something. We need to do something about it. Well, let's get back for a second to President Biden, who, as you may remember, his administration signed a proclamation for transgender visibility or something. It was signed or by the White House to be effective on Easter Sunday, which is March 31st. I have no idea how the White House missed this thing. Now, President Biden is now saying that he didn't know, which is pretty scary that he didn't know. I mean, look, I know the president is not always going to be aware of every little thing going on. We have to cut him a little slack. But he's signing a proclamation for Transgender Day on Good Friday or Happy Easter Sunday, Easter Sunday. And he's saying he didn't know. It's pretty scary that he didn't know that. So you have to wonder, is he lying or is he telling the truth? A lot of times with President Biden, the way he changes stories and creates stories that didn't happen, you have to wonder, you know, exactly what is going on with him, because he does this all the time. He'll say, you know, I was here, I was there, and we find out he wasn't. I mean, stuff like that that are, you know, pretty scary. But I don't think it helps his defense of this proclamation on Easter Sunday to say that he didn't know anything about it, or he didn't know, or he didn't do it. That's not a very smart way to confront a problem like this. But if he really didn't know that he signed a transgender proclamation, what else doesn't he know? I mean, that's a serious question. This is a guy who may be getting a phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning saying that some nuclear missiles are headed our way. And what's he going to do when he gets that call? Is he going to say, I didn't know that I was the president. Why are you calling me? I know that sounds a little trivial, but, you know, this is crazy when you have a president of the United States who doesn't know that he signed a proclamation, says he didn't know. Well, he didn't do it. Pretty scary, to say the least. Well, we'll go back on this day in history and we remember something very interesting that happened on this day in the year 2005. Makes it 19 years ago, and it's hard for me to believe that it was 19 years ago, but it did happen on this day in 2005, and that's the death of John Paul II, Pope John Paul II. You know, John Paul II came in 1978. If you remember, Paul VI had been the Pope for almost 20 years, 25 years, and then we had a Pope for literally 30 days or less than that, and he was John Paul I. And he died prematurely. And then John Paul II came in, becoming the first Polish pope and I think the first non-Roman in many, many centuries. And he connected very quickly with the public. He became almost like perfect for the times. If you remember, he took that trip to Poland in 1979, and he became a real voice. Anti-communist voice. Of course, John Paul II had seen communism and Nazism in Poland. So he knew the evils of the 20th century firsthand, first the Nazis and then the communists. And he became quite the face, if you will, of anti-communism around the world. And he became a real favorite of mine. I loved John Paul II. Toward the end of his life, I think his health was very bad. But he handled his health problems with a lot of class and a lot of dignity, and he passed away on this day in 2005. He was a great pope. And for me personally, the one pope that I think I got closest to, because the other popes, I mean, the popes before were just men in the Vatican that I respected, of course. And the popes since, Pope Francis at times is very disappointing. Pope Benedict, wasn't there, I guess, long enough to make much of a difference. Although some people say he was more effective than maybe, it's just that I don't know. But John Paul II was my favorite pope. And I have to tell you that I enjoyed every single day of his time. He came in 1978 and he passed away in 2005. That's almost 27 years that he was a pope, and a very good one, to say the least. My favorite pope, I put him down in that category. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.